Welcome, everyone. This is going to be a rather intimate call, I sense, tonight. We generally have 50 or 60 people on this call, and from those who have checked in, we only have a handful, and I'm not surprised with this being Christmas week and everyone getting the last of their shopping done. The call will be recorded so that we'll be able to put it up. It'll probably be, since the office is pretty shorthanded this week, it'll probably be on Monday when it's put up for those will be listening to it later. I want to open this up for just a moment. If there's a topic that's on someone's mind before we go into the topic that's on my mind this evening, is there any questions or challenges or anything specific that you would like to make sure that we address this evening? I almost know everybody who's on this phone call, so Eileen, how are you doing?
Well, we just spoke yesterday. I don't have anything that pops into mind right now.
Okay. And Cynthia, you and I talked just a few moments ago.
We did. I'm doing much better than last week, thanks, and I'm good.
Thank you so much for sharing last week. That was very precious, and things are looking better for Christmas. That's wonderful.
They are. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Harvey, how about you?
I'm sorry, I was on mute. No, just
about you.
Just a pleasure to be here, and looking forward to hearing what's on your agenda for tonight.
Very good, thank you. And John and Sue, welcome to the call. This is your first time tonight.
Yeah, thank you. We're looking forward to it.
We had a wonderful session this afternoon. It was delightful.
Absolutely.
And Conrad, you're on the line. Is there any?
Pardon, I missed you, Dave.
Is there anything that we can do to be of service to you this evening?
I'm just kind of waiting to see what you come up with there.
Okay.
Get from there.
Nothing like putting the pressure on me, right?
Dave.
And I heard a Kathy. Yes, go ahead.
Mike Johnstone here. We're just thinking, of, not so much of a challenge, but perhaps a breakthrough, and that is on the. On surrender.
Please share.
In terms of how that plays into our lives and how it plays into the lives of others, and how very often I can't speak for others, but I can speak for myself fairly well. We have a tendency to become self-centered and very egoistic, and the sooner that we surrender that, the sooner we can really be of service. The sooner we start listening, the sooner we start hearing. So I just wanted to kind of point that out. That was kind of a breakthrough for me this last week.
How can that show up when we're kind of holding back and unwilling to surrender? What kind of things might create that? Any ideas from your experience?
Because I tend to be headstrong, and so I've always done it my way, so we'll do it my way. And although your way sounds good, I've always done it my way, so you can have a reluctance to give up your own ways, your own definitions, and just to go around your own route instead of soaking up the abundance that's really all around us. If we just were to slow down, relax, take our egocentric hats off, and put on the hat of another, if you would.
Well said. Thank you. What a beautiful segue into our conversation this evening. Everyone on this phone, as I recognize the names of those on the phone, are involved in one kind of a business or another. Some are in training to become coaches. Some have network marketing companies. Some have other businesses. We all have the opportunity of connecting with people. And as we're talking about connecting with people, something has become increasingly clear to me. And I want to see if we can discuss it tonight and open up the possibilities. When we talk about, and I'm working on this article that Josephine from Network Marketing Times asked me to write. She's asked for one on the topic of empathy and another one on the topic of the eight ways we use our mind, the three destructive and the five constructive ways. And reflecting on empathy today and working on this article, it became increasingly clear that we sometimes have confusion around what it means to really own our past and what it means to be deadly honest, transparent, and vulnerable. There seems to be, at times, a belief that we need to be disclosing, and the truth is that we rarely have to say anything about our own life experience. I know in coaching sessions, I will sometimes use a life experience or in the recordings to make a point or help understand something better, help everyone understand something. But in terms of connecting with people, the secret is not in disclosing our situation. It's in owning our situation, owning what it feels like to be in that place so that we can see it in another human being. We have a tendency in today's society to still want to wear a little bit of a protective facade, and in some businesses more than in others, where we can be pretending or attempting to impress another person. Matter of fact, we even think it might be a requirement. And in the attempt to do so, we are actually denying our own experience. I had an experience yesterday. Took Ramona shopping last night. Now, I have to take Ramona shopping for her to buy stuff. That's just, she's always been that way. And so it's fun for me to take her out and spoil her a little bit. So we went to Nordstrom shopping. And we got done. She said, "What do you want for Christmas?" And, you know, I couldn't think of anything I really want. When we finally got done, it was some extra workout fits because I'm trying to get my body into shape. And a couple of ties and some new socks. The stuff our grandkids buy for us anyway, right? And so we went shopping, and we got her stuff for her, and then we went down to the men's department there in Nordstrom's to buy a couple of ties. And a lady walked up to me and said, "Dave Blanchard?" Like, she leaned in like, "Dave Blanchard, I thought I was supposed to know this person." And she introduced herself, and I recognized her last name because I know her husband. I said, "Oh, how are you?" And we got this wonderful conversation. She says, "What are you looking for?" And I said, "Well, I'm looking for a couple of ties. I usually buy my ties over at Utah Woolen Mills, and I like this sevenfold tie. What do you have?" And she says, "Well, this is the equivalent." Well, I almost choked when I saw the price. And I thought, well, I really want a nice tie for the suit that I have. But I kind of checked to see what else they had, and and I missed something. I missed something in the whole evening. We live in a very nice neighborhood, and she lives in this neighborhood. And she's working at a clothing store over Christmas to make a few extra dollars. And I found out later that her husband, I did not know this, had been having some health challenges. And she needed to make some money to support the family. And I came in as the neighbor buying the best tie in the shop and really missed an opportunity. This is a confession. Missed an opportunity to just be real with her. I was so focused on me getting the tie I wanted. And was it this much or that much? And is this a good one or that a good one? That I really didn't connect with her, and I watched Ramona, because Ramona did. And we walked out of the store, and Ramona told me the whole story. She had stepped into the world and asked how her husband was doing, and she says, "Oh, tell me more about that." And that brought out that she was working over the holidays. She used to work at Nordstrom's 10 years ago, and she needed to generate some additional revenue, and kind of gave her one of those little hugs. And, you know, I missed that because I was in this buy a really cool tie mood. Now, that's a simple example. But how many times do we get out in the world in a business setting where we are pretending or impressing and we're not being real to connect with this person? You know, on the way home, Ramon and I had a rich conversation. Because this is, I mentioned last week, our 20th anniversary this month packing up every belonging we had, driving away from our dream home, having lost millions of dollars and spending the next 10 years paying back $1 million in debt, and just, oh, the pain from that. And I wasn't in that space. And if I had been, I could have been a comfort to this woman. Instead, I could feel that she was just a little embarrassed. Is this making any sense? I could have made her at ease. Oh, it's so wonderful. Thank you for the service, and so good to see you, and I'll never forget you again. And I could have done a lot of stuff, but by the time I got home, I wanted to turn around and drive back and replay that experience. Simple example. But the point being that our objective is to be so real that we are so focused on other people and bringing abundance to their lives that we would be sensitive to and listen to and pay attention to those subtle moments, that we would not be in our own selfish world. And thank you, Michael, for your comment, because that's where I was last night. I was in my own little world. And I didn't surrender to the reality of that moment, nor was I prepared for it, as I should have been. What could have been different in that? What could be different if this Christmas, all of us, collectively, took all of those pieces where we're trying to be something or prove something or impress something, and we just let it all go for the rest of the holiday? I am so excited to let it go and just show up in the service of other people for the next week. What would happen if we brought our own life experiences and we were, as one client said yesterday, put on our listening ears. Teresa, it was a great comment. To put on our listening ears and be able to pay attention to those doors we might miss otherwise. That if we're with, we have parents or children or siblings, especially if there's been any friction between them, that we don't show up needing love. We don't show up needing validation. We don't need to show up needing someone to acknowledge our success or our position or our financial situation. We don't need anything. We show up totally available to serve another person. I'd like to see in the next 2 weeks, because we're not meeting next week because of the holiday. We're going to spend our time with our families next week. But in 2 weeks, I'd like us to be able to spend this Tuesday night reporting back what we did during this 2 weeks. What connections did we make that may not have been done? Now, I was in a session today, and we were talking about family, and there was a family member who was not going to be present for the Christmas holiday because of conflict with another person. And the conversation was, what would happen if in the next 2 weeks you made a call to this person? And if you have a sibling where there's been a rift, because maybe you were the oldest and they were the youngest and they felt cheated, or you were the youngest and they were the oldest and you felt like they always got everything and you didn't, or they were always the best and you always got blamed, or just the opposite, or whatever it might be, whatever dynamic, that over the course of the next 2 weeks, you make the commitment to call them. And it might sound like this. Hi, sis. This is Dave. How you doing? I just wanted to call and wish you a Merry Christmas. You know, you've been on my mind a lot lately. I've been thinking a great deal about our life. I don't know what it is about this economy, but it's made me get really honest about a lot of stuff in my life. And would you be okay if I was just honest with you for a moment? I just haven't shown up for you the way I should. What's it like to be in a relationship with me all these years? And then just listen. It's intrinsic validation at its finest. What's it been like to be in a relationship with me? Only thing you get to say is, tell me more. Or, is there anything else you'd like to share? Said kindly. And at the end, you know, I'm going to work on that. What could I do, second question, to be a better brother or sister in 2010? Or what could I do to be a better brother or sister in 2010? And then just listen. Now, for those of you who have parents that are still alive, it is interesting to me, in the last few weeks, I've been dealing a lot with individuals who are still struggling with parental issues. We have a tendency to expect our parents, still expect, even after decades, to show up differently than they did when we were growing up. We still want them to have that moment where they wrap their arms around us and tell us how proud they are of us, with tears streaming down their cheeks and all those things we've always wanted to hear from them. And most people, most, don't get to have that experience. Not in this lifetime. They say that 70% of families are dysfunctional, and so those things would most likely not happen in the majority of families. What would happen this year if you have parents that are alive and you're going to spend time with them or talk to them, that instead of showing up in need of their love or in need of their approval, that you show up to love them and validate them, to find the good in what they've done? Sometimes we might have to dig hard. Dog talks about it in Scroll 2. We don't scratch for gossip. We might have to dig for compliments. But finding something where we show up in love. It's very interesting that when we reach this point in life where we shift from needing love and approval from our parents to showing up and loving them is when the magic actually occurs. It's when they do the very thing we've been waiting for. And we have that moment where we hold them, and we hold them just a little bit longer, and we kiss them on the cheek and tell them how much we love them, and all of a sudden we look each other in the eye and there's Dad or Mom in tears. Those things can happen. But they generally don't happen until we show up like that. So there's another place to explore as a possibility. If we have grown children, we may have expectations of our children. We may want them to live a certain way. We may have a vision of what we expect them to be doing with their life. And it's very interesting how many of us, when we're with them, still treat them like five-year-olds. We still see the sock that's out of place in their room or the bedspread that wasn't quite perfect. And we want to fix them in the spirit of wanting the best for them. How about this holiday with our children, that all we do is step into their world and create the safest place for them? No matter what they're doing or have done, a safe enough place that, because some children are going to build walls of resistance, hate and suspicion. They use the word hate, but that suspicion, because every time they go to open up a little bit, we just want to jump right in and straighten out their life, just the way we used to straighten out their homework or straighten out their clothes. And this year, what would happen if we made the decision, the conscious decision tonight, not to give any advice, no advice, the whole time we're with them? All we're going to do is step into their world and listen to them and be interested in them, lean into the conversation. What might be different 2 weeks from now if someone's had challenges with a child? If the next 2 weeks, all we did, and I'm very aware that some on this phone have got really serious challenges, and still, what would happen if we made this a time of just being available? We heard a few weeks ago, Therese made the comment, and so did Rita on one of her comments where she said, the power is in the silence. Stepping into someone's world and just being there in silence and letting them just feel comfortable to start to come undone a little bit, to be able to share and share a little bit more. And no matter what they share, it's a safe place for them to share, because we all know that if you're like me, you're going to have children that are sometimes doing things that you wish they wouldn't do. And we're looking for that perfect moment to fix them or to share with them or to bear witness to them or whatever it might be. And this Christmas, what would happen if we didn't even go there? We just became a safe place. We just build a bridge so that our love could enter their soul. Trusting this, because I'm growing increasingly confident that human beings know. They know. They know what's right. They know what's good. And if we could trust that in everyone and create a safe place where they could have their own internal recognition of their value, they will, of their own volition, make the decision. I had this conversation again with my brother this week. The difference between last time he was sober and this time. And I can talk openly about him because he's agreed to be in a series for the alcohol program entitled I Am My Brother's Keeper. And again, the difference was before he was doing it for other people. And this time he's doing it really for himself. This time it's a deep peace inside of his own soul. The fire's in him. It's not a fire someone's putting under his feet. So no matter what the seriousness of the problem is, could we this Christmas just be a safe landing place? And I know for some that's going to be extremely difficult, and it may not be something you can do totally under the circumstances, but most of us will be able to do that with our children. Can you feel the Christmas spirit in this? Of just being available? And when we show up like this, we are bringing our own life experiences with us. We're not pretending to be something different. We're not trying to impress anyone. We're just being available. Totally available. And when we are, we will hear things differently. We'll hear doors. And we'll step through those doors with courage. And people will be able to let their walls down. Because unlike the past for many of us, I have one son. Oh, I'm talking to you because I'm talking to me. Christmas and these kinds of holidays are always an interesting experience because there's so much I'd like him to do. So much. This will be a Christmas of just being available, stepping into his world, and just loving him. That's the first thing I wanted to share with all of you tonight. There's an honesty in this. There's an honesty in this that is so pure. And for this honesty to be in our own souls, part of what we'll want to do is examine our own lives. In self-esteem, we know, as we discussed several weeks ago, that the three major causes are unmet expectations that cause us to doubt our own value, our own ability, that there are traumatic events that may have occurred in our life that have fractured those fragile underpinnings of trust. And then sometimes there's inconsistencies between the way we project ourselves to the world and what's really going on in secret. I had some wonderful conversations last week about this very topic. Because sometimes those things that are going on in secret are not salacious or awful things in terms of embarrassing. Sometimes it's just pent-up anger. Sometimes it's criticism. Whatever it is, want us this week and next week as we're going through this process to get absolutely in touch with what it is that goes on in our private lives, secret private lives, that's different than what we present out in the public. Because the more the two of those are consistent, the more healthy is our self-esteem. I'm going to share with you one more example. Last week was a very busy week, and we were doing a lot of recording for the alcohol program, and Friday night was going to be our company party, and Ramona was hosting it here at our home. Big dinner for everybody. It was wonderful. But Friday night's our date night, typically, so we moved our date night to Saturday night. Ramona was also the choir director for our choir for the big Sunday program last Sunday, and which was marvelous. It was just an inspiring event. They had a choir practice on Saturday morning that was going to go to close to noon. And then I was going to do some writing and working that morning, and then we're going to go watch a movie. Harvey, I heard you said you went to Avatar. I'd be excited to hear that, how that movie turned out. We went and saw Invictus, one of my favorite poems, and watched that show, and then we were going to go out and do some shopping and stuff we ended up doing last night. We got done with the dinner, and she's doing the dishes, and yes, I actually did. I got out of, I actually helped dry the dishes. Now, I can brag about this because it's seldom that I have an opportunity, but I took advantage of it, and we were talking, and that's when she dropped it on me. She said, Paul called, and my first thought was, no. Next comment, his babysitter fell through tomorrow night. Hell no. Oh, excuse me. Heck no. I wanted to be honest with you. And she said, you know, it's his birthday tomorrow. And he really wants to go to his company party and starts at 5:30, starts at 6:30, and he dropped off Layla at 5:30. And I was in such resistance, and Michael, you're talking about that resistance. I was in such resistance and rebellion to this because I had my heart so set on spending that afternoon and evening with Ramona without any obligations whatsoever. And, oh, I was moping. I didn't verbalize very much. I just, I really wish we could just draw boundaries occasionally. It's Ramona, she just loves her grandchildren. I love them too, but I can set boundaries. And she says, well, we need to call him back. And I'm thinking, well, I was waiting for her to say, okay, let's just go out on a date tomorrow night. And they can find a babysitter. We'll find one for them or something. But no, she just kept gently saying, well, we need to call him back before it gets too late. And so she went in the bedroom, and I heard her dial the phone, and I followed in after, and I sat down. And this is the truth. Ramona said, Dad's here with me. And Paul said, hi, Dad. And I said, hi, Paul. She said, well, we'll be happy to watch Layla tomorrow night. You know, at least I will be. And Paul said, I thought as much. That was so telling. That was so telling. I thought as much. And I thought, that guy knew that I probably had something planned. And he's too cheap to hire a babysitter. So I, in my moment, said, who was going to babysit for you? And she, Michael and Lacey, some of their friends. And I thought, well, that, okay. And by the time we got done with the conversation, I'd warmed up because Ramona stepped into Paul's world and we connected. And I told him I was very excited. Well, we got to the morrow, to the next night, and it had been a long day. We were racing back from the theater. I mean, racing to get back here in time. Still a few minutes late. Come running in the house, and if Layla weren't so darn cute, and just, hi, Grandpa, and thank you, and please, she's this two-year-old angel whose birthday was yesterday. It's melted my heart. And we got through the evening, and by the end of the evening, I was having this moment, and here's the moment I want you all to hear. During the holiday season, there's inevitably going to be something that comes up that's different than what we'd like to do. You might be a football fan and want to watch a game, but the family wants you to play a game with them at the same time. Well, can you feel it? Or something like that. Watch for it. Be prepared for it. Because Saturday night, when this was all over, I thought, you know, Ramona and I could have had the time of our life tonight with Layla. I was kind of there with just a little resentment hanging on. It took most of the evening just to kind of bleed it off. And I'm thinking, what could I have created with my granddaughter if I, Michael, would have surrendered, instead of fighting what was? Mm-hmm. What could have been created? I think it was okay, but it wasn't a power session. It wasn't exceptional, and it wasn't anything I wanted to write in my journal. What would have happened had I surrendered? Having a wake-up call around this issue of a Friday night, Saturday night when our grandkids want us, our children want us to babysit, and I need time with Ramona, and Ramona wants to watch them, how could I show up differently to create an amazing experience with Ramona and with that grandchild? Now, I'm not always in resistance, but I sure was Saturday night, and it was embarrassing. Because it was so inconsistent with what I teach and who I want to be. Let us all be conscious this week that as we're taking on these interruptions, that we show up being the person that we want to be. Let us surrender, and that's why, Michael, I love what you said. Let us surrender our resistant and often rebellious souls, and show up. That would be another way of showing up this Christmas holiday. So we have parents, we have children, we have friends. And sometimes we wouldn't choose. Hi, Alexandra. Welcome.
Hi, Dave. Thank you. Sorry to come in so late.
Well, it's wonderful to have you with us. We were just talking about all the ways in which we can show up this holiday season. Showing up for our children, really showing up, stepping into their world without needing to fix them or give them advice. If we have parents that are alive, showing up with them, not needing their approval or their love, but in fact giving ours to them. Of being able to surrender to what other people are doing and participate and get involved in the activities and not hold back, swamped with fears about finances or a new year coming or whatever it might be that might be on our minds, letting all of that go now, starting as we walk into tomorrow, as Wednesday, and then into Christmas Eve and Christmas, and just letting all of our selfish conversation go and actually showing up. That would be my hope for all of us. And as I mentioned earlier, 2 weeks from tonight, we're going to have you share with us some of the things that happened to you. And I'm going to be so excited to share some of the things that have happened for me in really consciously showing up, especially in those times when I may not be happy with the decision that was made. And making the decision. I had Ramona go to the bookstore because I've lost my copy, Man's Search for Meaning. And then Man's Search for Ultimate Meaning. It's going to be my Christmas reading. The time that I have up at the cabin to relax, that's what I'm going to read this Christmas. As I've reflected on Viktor Frankl. Here's Viktor Frankl, who's a renowned psychotherapist, who's spent a lifetime writing a manuscript, his life's work, who's yanked out of his home with his pregnant wife and his parents and hauled off to a concentration camp. And then they take his manuscript and tear it up in front of him and burn it. His wife dies still pregnant. He loses his parents. 3.5 years in this place. And the theme of the book is really simple. They can take anything away from me. They cannot take away my free agency, my freedom, my free will to choose my own attitude. To choose my own attitude. I'm going into this Christmas giving my family the gift of a better attitude in those moments. When Viktor came out of those concentration camps, he wrote Man's Search for Meaning, I believe, in 9 days, if I remember correctly. 9 days, the whole book. I'm going to read it with different reverence. I'm ready for it at a different level this Christmas. To feel and to know that for 3.5 years, he was alive because he spent the time breathing life into other people, inspiring them. May we spend this Christmas breathing life into people. May we be conscious that the one thing nobody can take from us, the one thing we absolutely have the right to choose, is our own attitude. And may we choose one that's healthy and is accommodating and joyful that everyone that's around us this holiday is lifted themselves. That would be my hope. Now, I'm going to open this up to any conversation or comments anyone has about this topic in preparation for Christmas. Any thoughts, questions, or comments?
I guess the only thing that I would like to say, and maybe this will open it up to others, is that Viktor Frankl has been a hero in my life for many, many years, because his focus is on attitude, and that's the name of my book, Attitudes, Beliefs, and Choices.
Alexandra is the attitude doctor.
There you go.
She's a PhD in transformational psychology, yes.
And also, I call myself a stretch and not a shrink. And his life has touched me so much because it makes me think what the human spirit can endure. I mean, look what just happened to him, you know. It's so, so empowering to know that we can endure. Anyhow, that's my only comment. It's very inspiring. And I'm going to read it also, Dave. I'll be thinking of you as I'm reading the pages of Man's Search for Meaning.
Well, thank you. And it's
thank
interesting
you.
When you say stretch, intentional creation comes with a root word tent, and tent means to stretch.
Oh.
So we're going to stretch. Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, thank you for letting me.
When you talk about enduring almost anything, I want to read you an email that I got this morning. It'll stay anonymous, but I want to share this with you. I'm not sure which email address you use now, so I use the shotgun approach. I hope you remember me. And I wrote back and said, how could I forget you? Just a sweet person. You rescued my family and me at the most difficult time of our lives. Sadly, the story didn't end with our appearance on Dr. Phil, nor the return of our daughter from prison. As you so eloquently expressed, we recently lost every material possession, including our beautiful home. He's referencing, he just read the shark story. Oh, to breathe again. That's what he's responding to. Including our beautiful home. In a futile attempt to save our lifestyle through the economic crash. We're now locked into a Chapter 13 bankruptcy plan for 5 years and living in a small rented house in a lousy neighborhood. We didn't just hit rock bottom. It feels more like we did a free fall, face plant into the bedrock, especially after everything else we had been through. Thank you for sharing your story. You have always been able to speak directly to my soul and give me hope. I know the Lord prepared, well, I'm going to go into the rest of that. We realize that we're being refined in the fire of affliction, but it doesn't make it any easier. I am writing this on my 51st birthday with a terrible fear in my heart that we don't have time to recover from this. But you've given me hope. May we listen for those folks. I've said on a number of our calls that there are people, no matter how difficult our circumstances, there are some folks out there that are having just terrible, terrible moments. I wrote back to him, I could never forget you. You've been on my heart for a long time. Take a moment and take the intentional creation assessment. Let me know when you have, and I'll turn on the entire series for you. This is the manual for digging out of where you are. It will not be easy, but it will be worth it. And when the sunlight of success shines again, you will know three things. One, this life is a laboratory. Two, God knows your name. Three, he will not rescue you, but he will work by your side and shorten the journey, but will not rob you of important lessons needed for your life's mission, which is just beginning. This is your Gethsemane. Even Christ said he didn't want to drink his cup. But nevertheless, thy will be done. Surrender to the experience. Well, this is a theme for today, Michael. Surrender to the experience without surrendering your magnificence. so important when these tragedies come that we help people surrender to what is, but not give up. It's just to get real, because we can't build on a house of fantasy. That's just cards. We've got to build on a solid foundation. Feel the experience deeply so that you never forget how it feels. Look to others who are suffering even greater pain and succor them. Lastly, those who have watched your sacrifice. Now, I want you to watch for people this Christmas who have made tremendous sacrifices in their life that have cost them. This man spent his life savings on attorney's fees defending his daughter, who had married a guy who turned out to be a bank robber, who did not have his driver one day and forced his wife to be the driver, and they got caught. And she went to prison. Lastly, those who have watched your sacrifice, watched you sacrifice everything for love of your daughter, have been deeply humbled by your example. Thank you for being you. I know there is someone on this phone tonight who has made enormous sacrifices for a child. And it is humbling to watch. It has caused me to reflect on this Christmas, what I have done and what I can do for my own children. Oh, that they may never suffer as this child is, but for this parent to show up again and again and again, financially, emotionally, and still feel as though they have not given all, may we find those people this Christmas and acknowledge their sacrifices. May they feel, we may notice it, we may have seen it, but we probably haven't said anything about it. If you've got a friend who's lost a spouse, and you've watched them struggle, call them and thank them for their courage. And reflect on how their example, someone who may have lost a child, or someone who's lost a home, or lost a business, who is still fighting. Ramon and I went to look at something the other night at the home of a gentleman and his wife. And they were in a rented home, and there was a picture on the wall of their family, and it was a family portrait, and I knew the photographer. This was a very expensive photo. And we were looking at an Al Rounds watercolor, this beautiful painting. And it was really sad, because this woman clearly had lived in the lap of luxury. Not too far from where they're now renting a home, in what was a multi-million-dollar home. He was a renowned manufacturer in the clothing industry. Had some health challenges. The economy took his business down. When I showed up to take a look at this watercolor, he was on the phone taking reservations for JetBlue. A man who's about 60 years old, living in a rented home, his wife just a nervous wreck. Oh, you know, we've lost everything. There's hope. Everything's going to be okay. Just a little hug, just a little moment, just a little connection. Oh, it's wonderful what you can do when you're real about where you've been. May we find those people who have had a loss and acknowledge their courage to do whatever is necessary to make an income to support their family. Oh, my goodness. Taking reservations in what's about a $20 an hour job from a man who used to make seven figures a year. And, okay, willing to pay the price if that's what it takes to support his family. Huh. Anybody ever been there? Anybody had a loss that severe? Anybody felt what it feels like to drive away from a dream home and having everything fall apart? Oh, to be 70 feet underwater, running out of air with sharks swimming around you, if you had a chance to read that article. May we see those people, put our arms around them, and thank them for their example of courage, for their willingness to surrender their pride and to deal with what is. Let us find those. They're everywhere. They're in our congregations where we might go to church. They're in civic organizations. We'll see them. Let us be available for them as well.
Dave, I'd like to share, if it hasn't happened to me, but if I could just take a couple minutes. Our son-in-law, our daughter and son-in-law have been married 8 years. They had a beautiful, beautiful wedding here at the River Run Lodge in Sun Valley, Idaho, where we live. And Michael was challenged at that point with a company, direct drilling company, that eventually went under. And so that's how they started their marriage, shortly after his company went under. And he never really had a career. And so what's to do now? He had tried to get into nursing school and didn't pass some kind of test. He's never been good at taking tests. He had, as a child, I worked with him as far as the reading and how his memories would go back to when he was a young child, and they made him, they didn't pass him in elementary school, in kindergarten, and how he had to go back and how humiliated he was and how that memory was so poignant for him. So he didn't do well in nursery school. He went to go work in the Veterans Hospital in the maintenance department so he could provide for his wife, and at that time, a pregnant wife with twins. And then he went to a paramedic program, and after 8 months of working at it, the very last test he took was below 80%, and any tests that were to be taken under 80%, he'd be out of the program. After 8 months, 9 months or so of this program, he was out of it. They dismissed him from one test. And my daughter isn't working at this time. She has twins. And Michael is like searching for meaning, a purpose, just wanting to provide for his family and not being able to. And so then he goes to work again to paramedic school at the University of Idaho after a long study, almost a year. He takes his first test and does not pass it. Meanwhile, they are living with us since April, and he takes his second test on the 13th of December, and on the 16th of December, which is their anniversary, he takes his test again, the second time on the 13th, and didn't think he did too well, but wasn't certain. On the 16th, he got an email saying, "Congratulations, you have passed." And this, he bawled like a baby, crying so hard and so grateful. And my prayers were simply, they need this so bad. Dear God, if you can see in any way to bless them with getting through this test, they need it so badly. Anyhow, he is a full-fledged paramedic. He's a fire medic because he took a fire training course also. And it's been very, very challenging to watch him wanting only one thing, and that's what you said, to provide for his family. And he did that as he was in the maintenance department at the hospital and taking this test and doing whatever. He said, "I will take it again and again and again until I pass it." So I thank you for letting me share that. It certainly has meant a lot to our family, and it's been a real gift this Christmas holiday.
May I acknowledge two things, Alexandria? One, and I'm glad you mentioned it, We can pray all we want, but they were living with you. You were doing something about it. All you could do, you couldn't take the test for him.
Right.
But you created a safe place where he could prepare for the test.
I tried to.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, thank you.
That's the miracle. By the way, everyone on the phone, Alexandria, I mentioned, has her PhD in transformational psychology, and we're going to have a blast because we're going to be using some of her material in our alcohol recovery program for the family members, for the small children. I want to give you two websites. If you've got any grandchildren or children that you would like to give a great experience to, go to abcfeelings.com. Is it feeling or feelings? Feelings.
Feelings, plural. Mm-hmm.
Feelingsplural.com. They've got a coloring book. She did this years ago. It's a coloring book, A through Z, with each letter representing a feeling. You want to pick that up. You want to pick up the CD that comes with it. And then there's a storybook that you can read. We do a lot of reading with grandkids. I can't wait for the book to get here so I can read to them about feelings, because we're living in a society where our children and even our grandchildren are just getting shut down emotionally. And for them to be able to start to recognize feelings and then an opportunity to have that conversation, that would be one. And the other one is called theattitudedoc.com. And she's got a fun program. It's a 21-day program to take on your life. It's like $29.95. It's really inexpensive. I would highly recommend that everybody log on to those two sites. And is it too late for Christmas, I would imagine, to get stuff shipped?
Well, the course could be done right online. So
yeah, it can be done online. So it gets delivered online.
The books can be done right away. The books could go out tomorrow, but they still... Unless it was overnight and close by, you know, they probably wouldn't get it, of course, not by Friday.
But if you have those things around your home for grandkids when they come, certainly a fun thing to pick up, because we're excited about getting it here as well.
Thanks, Dave. Thank you for your comments tonight.
You're welcome.
Phyllis Abrams, welcome to the site that's designed to educate.
There you are.
You know, I have to share something really quickly, too, that I think is rather comical, and that one of my moments when I was in the valley, rather at the peak, I happened to go to my website for some reason, and I heard my voice, and I ended up listening to my whole marketing pitch, and I thought to myself, God, that's pretty good advice. I think I'm going to take it. Because, you know, I talk about the ceiling fan, and how when we're out on the blade, we're in our personality, but when we're in the center of the motor, we're solid, you know, and I thought, God, that's good advice. I'm going to take that advice. I'm going to get back in the center of my fan.
So take a moment and share with us why a PhD in transformational psychology would engage in coaching with intentional creation.
Oh, to be of service. My heart is so full when I feel like I've been the channel to help somebody move their energy, and that's what happens. I help people move energy and remember who they are, and that's very helpful. And I also give people a tool where they can do this on their own, because it's very possible. We just need a lot of tools in our toolbox, and our greatest tool is, for me anyhow, is that power, that force, that order behind the cosmos, as my Greek friend refers to God. And that intelligence, because that's right here that I can tap into anytime. That's the center of the fan for me. And when I work hand-in-hand with that force, with that energy, with that intuitive self, I'm able to help people move a lot of energy. I did a conference call last night with five women on the phone and did a process with one woman, and they were all very, very deeply moved by it, and there was healing that went on. So it's to serve. I would be honored to do something to fill that capacity in that way, just to serve and help people move energy and remember who they are.
Well, that's a great way to take all that we've said tonight and put it into one little package and wrap a bow around it.
Great.
That we're going to show up, and all the things we've talked about is to show up in partnership with that power that governs abundance. I call that power God. Your friend has a Greek reference to it, and others may have a different one.
Mm-hmm.
I found that that power isn't necessarily offended by that.
And in Nepal, they call it Namaste.
Yeah, there you go. And so I will. I salute the God in all of you.
Mm.
And may we show up that way this Christmas. May this be something that we will remember for a lifetime, that there'll be new traditions established in the way we show up, new conversations established, bridges built where there may have been some injuries, that our love can enter the souls. I just love, it's not the heart, the soul, as Og says in Scroll 2. Mm. We might have that opportunity to build bridges this Christmas holiday. Is there anything anyone would like to add to that before we wrap up this session tonight? Okay, we have our mission cut out for us. Let us go out and impact everyone we come in contact with for the next 2 weeks, and then we'll come back on Tuesday and we'll have a celebration of sharing some of those moments that we had during this holiday season. Wish you all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and so excited about 2010 and what's ahead for everyone.
Thanks so much, Dave. It's been a pleasure to share this evening with all of you.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. And
thank you, Dave.
We'll talk to you in 2 weeks, okay? Good night.
Thank you, Dave. Bless you.
Good night. God bless you.
Good night.
Good night.